From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's USDA Report Day, March the 9th, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson, the reports from today and those on March the 31st with NDSU's Frayne Olson, discuss the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt, and take up the weather forecast too, that with Don Day. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now, corn settled at $5.45¾ today, a penny and a quarter lower than July at $5.34¾ a bushel, down 1¼. And December contract at $4.84¾, up 3¼ cents. May soybeans at $14.40 even, 6¼ higher. July $14.26, up 7¾. And November beans at $12.62, 7¾ cents higher. The bean meal at $4.1660, up 30 for the day. And the bean oil at $53.55, $1.09 higher. Wheat futures soft red at $6.56½, up a dime. The hard red at $6.26½, up 4¾ on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at $119.65, up 30. June up 50 at $119.65. Feeder cattle at $137.15, $1.80 higher than the March. The April up 240 at $142 and 7½ cents. And lean hogs at $83.35 per 100 pounds at $1.05 higher for the afternoon. Crude oil futures $1.08 lower, a barrel $63.96. The U.S. diesel fuel down about 0.1 cents, and the gasoline is just about unchanged at $2.04. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago after today's USDA report. I won't even call it a big report. It's a monthly report, so we see it all the time, but the changes weren't big today. Actually, they were really tiny, and I don't know, the trade, I think, Wayne, was expecting more from this report than it delivered, though it didn't really react very much even in Chicago today. What'd you think of it?
Well, I think that basically they were hoping, I don't know whether thinking they would do it, but hoping that they would probably, increase some exports, maybe decrease some of South America's crops, see a little bit of move in the numbers and like that. And basically, as we look at it, they did probably the right thing. They didn't do much because there's a lot of unknowns that'll be known to us by the end of the month here when we get some other numbers from the government. But and also we get a little farther along in looking at Brazil and Argentina's harvest that way. You know, we see pictures of spoiled beans down in Brazil. We hear how farther behind harvesting, and yet, what do? We raised Brazil's crop a little bit. And we left Argentina's, the same or down just over half a metric tons. So, a lot of stuff going on, but I think we need to sort of get a little farther in their harvest numbers to see if we change stuff. And we haven't seen any flash announcements of sales lately. We were expecting a big one in the corn the other day from China, and it didn't happen. So, we're just sitting here waiting to see if we can follow through with what we think is out there.
You mentioned that on the international numbers that USDA raised the size of the Brazilian soybean crop, but the ending stocks for corn, soybeans, and wheat were all up just a little bit this month. I suppose that'll put pressure on the market over time.
Well, yeah, a little bit. They were in countries that generally aren't even mentioned, Turkey, India, and like that. So, but I mean, the big thought still out there is China going to continue to buy? Are they going to continue to add two things? Will they come back to us like they were thinking they might with the 40-some-day waiting to load a boat down in South America? Will they come back for us in July rather than sit in those lines? So, it is the question mark of will China come back into the U.S. market, number one, and what will the weather and planning conditions be? Number two. And, we had beautiful times here. We saw people put in anhydrous on the field here yesterday afternoon. But if we look ahead to the weekend here, Thursday, Friday, looks like it could be 1 to 3 inches of rain.
Hey, my guess is that rather than getting the calls about what's happening in Chicago, people are calling and saying, what should I do about my crop insurance? Is that right?
That is the bigger thought here for the next 3 to 4 days. And, you know, there's a couple different things with the ECO and where you can go up to 90 to 95%. But when they add that, they have to remember that that's a county policy, not onto the one they have. And, you know, some of the guys are really looking, and we're thinking that maybe with the uncertainty of all the weather craziness that we've seen over the last couple of years, that the wind and hail policy that goes on and goes on a per acre basis is maybe something we're looking very strong at recommending. Thank you, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. On this Tuesday, USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report afternoon, we're going to talk with Frayne Olson. He's with North Dakota State University's a crop economics and risk management specialist there. Hey, thank you, Frayne, for being with us. Can you go through the numbers that were released by USDA? And I think it'll be very quick because they're exactly the same as last month for corn, soybeans, and wheat. With, I think there was one exception in the soybeans, right?
Yeah, there was just a one little switch of about a million bushels that went out, reduced in residual and increased in planted acreage. And my assessment of that, it's a rounding error difference. You know, do you round up or do you round down when you talk about the bushels that show, in particular for the seed side. This is a very, very small change. You know, it almost looks like you took a photocopy of last month's numbers and just reprinted them this month. There's very, very minor change, both domestically as well as globally.
Yeah, and in fact, even though there was a slight change in the soybeans, the ending stocks, because one category was up one and one was down one. So the ending stock stayed at 120 million. Just like last month, corn ending stocks are the same. The wheat ending stocks are the same. So kind of a normal March report, I think. Usually not a lot happens in this month.
Correct. Usually there's very little changes in the March. And again, it's just part of it is the methodology that USDA uses to put together the forecasts. By the time we get into this February-March time period, especially for soybeans, our export pace is starting to slow, you know, which is part of the forecasting process they make. And, you know, it's just kind of the assumption is we've got this cyclical behavior for exports, both corn and soybeans. Soybeans, of course, the cycle is much stronger than it is in corn. But typically this March, we don't have a lot of new information. If there was anything, it would likely show up on the international level, in particular for potential forecast changes for South American production for both corn and beans. And, of course, we really didn't get much there either. USDA did increase their forecast for Brazilian soybeans from 133 million metric tons to 134 million metric ton. Again, that could be as simple as just the rounding error that as they reran their models, they rounded up instead of rounded down. So I really don't anticipate any or see any big changes.
Everything focuses to March 31st in the acreage report. That's the prospective plantings figures and the quarterly grain stocks report, I suppose, at this point then.
Yeah, and in my opinion, both of those are going to be important. Obviously, the big attention will be on that prospective plantings report because that's the first time we get a kind of an insight in what farmers are actually thinking of. So for clarity, you know, USDA surveys about 80,000 farmers across the U.S. and asks them, look, given what you know today, what are your intentions for planted acreage going into 2021? Knowing that they can adjust and tweak and change over time as we get closer to spring's work based on weather and soil moisture conditions and relative prices. But, you know, again, we typically don't see dramatic shifts from that March into the June report. But it is our first glimpse into what farmers are thinking relative to what a lot of the traders and analysts are thinking. On the quarterly stocks report, I think the number we'll be watching the most closely will be the soybean number. And it really, again, it's a survey of not only farmers and how much they have in inventory, but also how much the commercial grain handlers and processors have in inventory. So we're going to use that again as a benchmark to say, how quickly are we burning through our supplies? You know, how hard do we have to ration our use or consumption of soybeans to get to those new crop supplies, usually in that October timeframe? So big emphasis will be on prospective plantings, but, you know, don't overlook that quarterly stocks report either.
I know the trade analyst sometimes will look at the number for soybeans now at 120 million bushels left by the time we get to the fall of this year. That's the ending stocks for soybeans, and say, oh, that's more than we actually can have. Not possible. But USDA is always recalculating based on what they think rationing will do, not what really the use pace is today.
Correct.
I suppose. And the quarterly grain stocks numbers will help them put that all into perspective.
Correct. That really does. Those quarterly stocks reports really help refine the forecasting and the projections, especially for the end of the year. Obviously, as we get closer to the end of the year, it becomes a lot easier to try and nail down that number and get a bit more precise. So, and I know there's a lot of farmers that sometimes get very, and analysts that get critical of the USDA numbers, especially for soybeans, because we, you know, historically have seen some adjustments kind of happen at the last minute. And part of that is just a change in the process they were using. For several years, they didn't do a crusher survey. They were using information from NOPA and then trying to convert into the USDA formulas. Well, they've gone back to actually doing that fats and oilseed survey themselves. And so from my perspective, that's added a lot more clarity. It's really helped them zone in and make sure that those ending stocks forecasts are as close and accurate as we can make them.
2 points on that. One, when you roll those numbers from the March 31 figure into the April WASDE, which USDA will do, that they'll be rolled into that, though it's a little tougher. But when we get to the last one in September, you can simply actually roll it forward into October, because USDA says we actually have an accounting of what was used.
Correct.
And this is the number. So good hard numbers to work with once we get to the end of the year. A little more squishy at this time of year, but even then they'll roll them. Yeah, a lot more squishy sometimes. Hey, 300 or 400 million bushels has been showing up sometimes and going away sometimes in the corn numbers. There was a period where it did it fairly often for a couple, 2 or 3 years. That's beginning to happen again. Do you think that'll happen this month?
Well, we may see a little bit of that. So let me explain why that is happening. So on the corn side, the most difficult number to really come up with as a solid number, you talk about squishy, is that feed and residual number. Because first, it's a very large number. It's 40 to 45% of our total corn consumption goes into that bucket. But it's both feed and residual. And again, tracking that gets to be very difficult, because not all of the corn that we harvest goes across a scale someplace before it gets fed. And so managing that number gets to be really, really difficult. And so part of it is in the residual, which think of a residual as like spoilage and wastage. And then there's part of it that goes into the actual feed supply. Well, when we have years where we have quality problems, either a moisture problem, a test weight problem, all of a sudden that residual number gets to be the where we dump all of the stuff that we don't know where it disappeared from. And so USDA has a much more difficult time in years where we have a corn quality problem to make sure we have the right number. And of course, once you run it across the scale, if you have a test weight problem, most farmers report their inventories based off, you know, the bushels in a bin, and may not always adjust for the quality attributes like a test weight or a moisture adjustment. So
just the visual of the bin holds this much.
Correct.
And
when you're talking,
but really it's not really 12,000. It's not really 12,000.
Yeah, right. You're right.
I mean, much lighter than
you write it down as, you know, when you answer your survey, you write it down as 12,000, but it might be something a little less than that by the time you take it out and you run it across a scale. And so, you know, when we're talking, you know, 5+ billion bushels of corn going into the livestock sector, you know, you start taking a couple percent here and a couple percent there for test weight adjustments and or moisture adjustments. And, you know, that adds up to some big bushels.
Well, since I'm from Illinois and you're from North Dakota, we're all going to blame it on Iowa, the derecho and the drought in that area.
There you go.
and the drought in that area. There you go. Hey, thank you, Frayne.
It's usually us up here in the north that have some light test weight that causes the problems. But yeah, this year with some of the storms came through, we'll blame it on Iowa.
You betcha. All right. That's Frayne Olson. He is with North Dakota State University. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Tuesday, let's take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Here in our part of the world, it has just been magnificent for the last week or week and a half or so. It looks like there will be some rain coming. Can you give me a broad overview of what the Corn Belt, maybe some of the wheat-growing regions of the United States, might be like through the end of the month of March?
Yeah, well, it looks like there's some wetness coming our way. Now, there'll be some areas that get more and some areas that get less, but we're going to see the pattern, which you mentioned. It's gone back to a warmer spring-like weather pattern over the last week to 10 days in many areas. But we're going to see winter still throwing us some curveballs. We're going to start to see that this week. We're going to see some areas of showers and thunderstorm activity over the next couple of days reach the northern part of the Corn Belt, Iowa, Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin, and Nebraska. Then, that's with one system. A stronger system comes in behind it this weekend, and we're going to see snow breaking out across the western high plains, part of the Front Range of the Rockies, as well as later into the early parts of next week. Nebraska, parts of Iowa, South Dakota, Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin are going to be looking at not only precipitation, but it will be cold enough for some March snow in those areas. And we could see some significant amounts of moisture over the next week to 10 days. We could see anywhere from 1 to 3 inches of water equivalent from both rain and snow over parts of Nebraska and parts of Iowa and eastern areas of South Dakota and Missouri and Kansas, areas that have been drier than normal. So there is going to be some beneficial moisture coming with these storms.
I'm wondering, as I'm thinking back over the last several years or so, if there's a throughway, a corridor of some sort where that winter weather about this time of year runs through from Nebraska through parts of Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Might that be the case?
Well, it kind of is. And it's a function of latitude a little bit. You know, you get along in north of Interstate 80. As you look at the calendar, it's March 9th. You know, we're not quite there yet, so there's still opportunities for cold air to leak in out of Canada. And that's exactly what's going to happen. And what you just mentioned in terms of what your experience has been before, that could very well happen again. I think you're going to see snow making the news headlines this weekend and early next week across parts of the northwestern and western Corn Belt and into the high plains and Rockies. There's going to be quite a bit of weather coming our way after a long stretch of mild weather after the big mid-February Arctic outbreak.
After we get to the Monday of next week, that's the 15th, we'll be halfway through the month. Any change after that for the rest of the month?
Well, I think it'll be a fairly typical weather pattern. There'll be systems moving on through. Despite this return of some wintry weather, I do think after that winter weather comes in, we'll have some warmer weather for the end of March and into early April. We'll need to watch the end of March and early April for probably another one of these slower-moving, stronger storm systems coming out of the Western Plains.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Each and every week, we also take a look at the agricultural energy sector. This week, Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services joins us to do that. Hey, Steve, thank you for being on with us today.
Oh, happy to do it.
What's changed in the last month for you?
Oh, actually, the market actually picked up some more volatility to the upside, which generally I was not expecting. The market just yesterday reached a new high for the move and new highs prior that had not been reached really prior to the pandemic. It came off of some attacks against some Saudi production facilities and refineries by Houthi rebels. And also, I think even the COVID-19 stimulus package, which was actually passed this weekend was a big factor on it as well. The market over the past month has really performed quite strongly. We've seen the April crude. It had been trading at about 58 a month ago, get up to 68 yesterday. It's trading at currently around the 66, actually 64 area. So we did have a pretty hard break in crude. Gasoline had moved from 178, reached 211, and is now trading around 204. And the April diesel reached over 198 yesterday after trading 176 only a month ago and currently is near 190. So in terms of these markets, we've seen some pretty major moves. The question remains, is this this attack on Saudi facilities a real threat? It doesn't appear to be. The market performed very similar to what it did back in SEP of 2019, where the market rallied strongly after a similar attack and fell hard and pretty much made a major top at that time. I think we're going into a lot of uncertainty in terms of the market. Producers have been rather disciplined in terms of their production cutbacks. Earlier this month, we saw OPEC Plus keep their production cutbacks in place, and that was unexpected for April. They thought they'd loosen up, and they really didn't. Saudi Arabia continued to maintain their voluntary cutbacks. And I think overall, this market was kind of taken off guard by that action. So Saudis have been pretty much in control. The question is, will the producer group change their stance on output levels and actually increase them when they meet again on April 1st? I think as a producer or ag producers, you do have to be cognizant of your input costs. We certainly are seeing inflationary pressures build in terms of those costs. You have to look at them relative to your crop prices that you expect to earn and move ahead here as we face some of these challenges.
Hey, I appreciate you taking the time and your expertise today. We'll talk with you again in another month.
Look forward to it.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon.